Hello, lovely listeners. Author Pamela R. Haynes here with the penultimate episode of the Author to Author podcast. It has been a busy week at Haynes Studios, with books flying in from around the planet to be included in season 6 of the podcast. I have a few celebrity authors coming up, so follow me on social media for updates. My summer will be filled with listening and reading books. I'm excited to let you know that the Author to Author podcast will be joining the London World Radio family on LWR Talk and Chalk Hill Community Radio. I'm looking forward to the podcast reaching even more readers of good literature. Also, big congratulations to my producer Ian Chambers on becoming a judge at the prestigious British Podcast Awards. A huge thank you to all of my lovely listeners who voted for me in the Black Girls Who Write Lit Award competition. Alas, I didn't win in any of my categories, but I'm very happy to have been nominated and shortlisted. The closing date for nominations are still open for the National Diversity Awards and the Caribbean Global Award competitions. It's all still very exciting. Thank you for sharing your Dalgetty tea stories with me on my author page on Facebook. Don't forget to use the discount code A2AS5 for 10% off your next Dalgetty tea order. In this week's episode, I interviewed self-published author Kath Lloyd about her courageous book, When Dad Became Joan. Let's jump into her episode now. See you on the other side. Hello there, Kath, and welcome to the Author to Author podcast. It's nice to interview you. How are you doing?
I'm really good, thank you. And thank you, Pam, for inviting me to be talking with you. It really feels good.
No problem at all. I mean, I first heard you speak at the TEDx in Wolverhampton. Very impressed with what you had to say. I actually listened to the YouTube video again morning as well, and it was just as powerful as it was when I first heard you. So I had to get hold of you through our mutual friend, Aurea Rees, who was also a TEDx speaker that day.
She was a brilliant speaker. Brilliant.
The whole day was just so uplifting, I have to say. You know, despite what different subject matter, but, you know, across the board, I was very impressed with it all and how it was all organised, and just so glad to be in the room. So, Kath, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? And in terms of your heritage, what would you claim as being your heritage?
So I'm born and bred in the West Midlands, or as some people might like to say, the Black Country. And so really I've lived all of my life around this area and served my parents. My husband's from Birmingham. My kids have flown the nest and gone further away, but still in the UK. And so, yes, I spent my life around the West Midlands working, teaching. So I've always taught in adult education, and then doing that led me into doing some teaching at a school for a centre for excluded children in Wolverhampton, which then led me on to teaching in male jail, still in the West Midlands. And that was a real eye-opener to a different world of people, situations, that, you know, life isn't as straightforward as people think it's going to be. Life is a lot more complicated, that it's very, very complex. There's a lot of interference, whether that's good or bad, coming from a whole different directions. And it was a massive education. And in that jail, I met some of the most interesting people on my journey, and some of the most desperate people as well, who were trying to make a different life for themselves, but somehow couldn't get themselves out of the cycle that they had got themselves into. And like a lot of jobs like that, I always say, that job has a life cycle of its own. I'd come to the end of that life cycle. And then, but on that run up to it, I knew that it was looming. I started looking at different areas to work in. I did a little bit of training in counselling, but I felt it really wasn't for me. It didn't really suit my personality. And so life coaching is where I headed because I like working with people from where you are today and helping them to get to where they want to be. And so that is the course that has started to take me on. Yes, the life coaching helped me tremendously with teaching prisoners, especially men, gave me a lot more confidence. But that's where I realized, where I wanted to go. And so eventually the time came to end that phase of my life and then start the new phase of my life. And it was the right decision.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it will always be the right decision when you decide to make a change, because change happens twice, first on the inside, and then the manifestation on the outside when you actually physically make a change and do something different. And having been an assistant governor at a prison in Nottingham, I can certainly relate to the people that you come across in your in the course of your work. Fascinating people as well who have their own stories to tell. And I think it was last Black History Month I went into my local prison, which is Pentonville. We were looking at how we can enable them to tell their own stories as well, because they have some
Brilliant.
very interesting tales in terms of what happened to them that led them, up to this point where they were incarcerated. How long were you in that post for before you decided to change?
So just over 14 years. So I
Oh, wow.
originally went in teaching general art and design and then moved into social and life skills. So setting up a parent craft course, running that, healthy living. And then after I'd done my life coaching training, I set up an effective thinking course and then helped with the mentoring course. And a little bit of everything else along the way, like you do when you're a teacher in jail.
You left that and you're now into life coaching and so on. What's the kind of work that you do now, and what's the kind of client group that you work with now?
So I work with people, dominantly women, who want to end sadness after big turmoil in their life to help them regain, and restore calm, peacefulness, and find their new normal again.
That's absolutely huge. Do you find that there are women who are looking for that kind of service and support?
Oh yes, because turmoil, massive change comes from all sorts of different things, and it isn't just one thing. I found it is a build-up of things. And you're trying to juggle life, perhaps your children, perhaps looking after aging parents, and then something comes along as an added extra pressure on you, or burden, or responsibility. And this is where the turmoil comes in, and the anxiety and the stresses and strains. And so, there isn't a particular issue or situation. And of course, it makes it more complex because we're all individuals, aren't we? We all think and feel in different ways and we process information differently. And so, it's fascinating working with these people to help them restore the life that they are desperate to have back or something similar to it.
And what have been the some of the outcomes for the clients that you work with? What have been some of the positive outcomes?
So one of the most, I think, challenging people that I've worked with was I suddenly had this phone call off this young lady saying, I'd really like you to help my mum. And the problem was that she was agoraphobic and she was frightened she wasn't going to go to her daughter's wedding. And, you know, while we were talking about it, I was thinking, oh, I'll have about 6 months to sort this out. That's absolutely fine. So when's the wedding? In 6 weeks. So I spent a lot of time working on relaxation with her and teaching her a technique for her to relax her mind and to channel her thought processes. And she worked really, really hard at it. And she phoned me. We'd already organized that she could phone me on the day of the wedding because they wanted to stay over the night before because it was an early wedding. And she hadn't hardly been out the house for 7 years. She struggled to go and hang the washing on the line in the garden. And she phoned me and she'd learned along the process, she'd learned how to incorporate these relaxation techniques in a way that people didn't realized that she was doing it, and she'd stayed away the night before, and she was very excited. She said, "Sorry, I've got to go, and you know, I need to go and help whoever." And she had an absolutely fantastic day, and it was such a joy to help her and hear how excited she was, you know, to
And
be
just by
there.
you retelling the story as well, I can see that it brought you a lot of pleasure about being able to help her and to support her as well. So it's not
Oh,
just what you give, it's what you get
absolutely.
back.
Absolutely. And this lady, she was crippled with anxiety. Literally, her hands were like this. And I spent the first meeting I had with her, spent, I think, an hour and a half. And an hour of that was just going through a breathing technique, relaxation, and she'd get so far and then she'd be in tears. So then it would be a process of calming her back down again. We'd start the process again. And eventually we got through the whole process. But when I went and met her the next week, the difference when she opened the front door, her hands were more open. She got more color in her face and she was walking better. And we went through the process again and we didn't have all the tears. She worked really, really hard to get to where she wanted to be, which was absolutely fabulous.
Oh, it's a great story to tell, and it's wonderful to hear good outcomes coming from counselling as well. Because, as a senior probation officer, I have referred staff members to professional counselling, and I always say just invest the time. If it's 10 sessions,
Yes.
just complete the sessions. You can't write it off, after an hour's worth. Invest in it, your time in it, and complete the course, and then you can make decisions about whether you want to carry on and continue, or perhaps you need another kind of counseling, because there's different kinds of, person-centered, task-centered, different types of counseling, but at least invest in it. So it's wonderful to hear that you've had clients who have come through the process and had successful outcomes. Thank you for sharing that. Kath,
My pleasure.
thank you so much for sending me a copy of your book, which is called When Dad Became Joan: Life with My Transgender Father. It's so on topic at the moment, isn't it?
It is. It is.
The whole transgender agenda. And what I like about your book is it's not just storytelling, it's about giving strategies for any major life change. Not that you can apply the strategies to any
Yes.
situation, but let's go back to, I think the year is 1987. Please tell us a little bit about your story with your dad.
My dad was my go-to person. He could fix anything, make anything right. He, very conscientious person, hard-working person, beard. He, you know, did rock climbing, mountaineering, running. The DIY, the gardening, fruit and veg, all of those sorts of things. And camping holidays, and he would stand up all night holding the tent down because we went on a lot of stormy camping holidays, you know, to make sure that we were all safe. And then in, 1987, I was 23, he summons me home. He just started to try and explain about his thoughts and his feelings, and I just didn't know where the conversation was going. But then he just said, "I've made the decision to undergo gender reassignment treatment, and your mummy's okay with it." And then he said, "Have you got any questions?" And my mind just went blank. I didn't know what I was thinking. I didn't know what I was feeling. And yeah, I was so shocked. I laughed because, that's one of the symptoms of shock is laughing until I saw the hurt on his face, because he certainly wasn't expecting me to laugh. And I realized that he was deadly serious. And then quite quickly, I'd go home and he would be dressed as Joan and started to look totally different. And, hair being different, going through the treatment, having the electrolysis. Of course, Joan had to live as Joan for 2 years before she could have any major operations. So it was a very difficult time. And then I found out that my mum had known for 10 years. So my mum had been holding on to this information on her own. She'd been there to protect herself, her husband, her marriage, her children, her job. And thought, well, no wonder she's been so anxious and stressed and perhaps sort of moved away from people, because it was just very, very difficult for her. But thankfully, they stayed together and lived as companions. And so, yeah, they lived there the rest of their life together, which doesn't happen that often. And my mum had dug deep and realized that, why she was in this relationship, tapped into her values and what was important. There was probably a bit of in their thoughts of being scared to leave, which is understandable. But yeah, she decided to stay. And the friends that sort of they lost because of my mum isolating herself, they gradually came back and restored those friendships again. Yes, they reform their life.
I mean, you tell the story so beautifully, and but one thing that you did and did really well is you talked about the loss of your dad, and in a way, looking at the impact of his decision on everything, on everybody else. And you talked about the grief cycle, and I'm just wondering whether you can talk about that a bit more.
Yes, of course. Because grief isn't just about the finality of loss. Grief comes around quite often when you're going through massive change and you follow that same sort of process as the grief cycle. And people would say to me, well, they're both happy, they're both healthy, aren't they? And I'd say, yes. But it didn't account for what I was thinking and feeling inside. And what I was really struggling with was, on the one hand, I wanted to stay and be supportive. This is a person that I love, respect, trust. But then on the other hand, I was really, really frightened. And I wasn't sure what was going to happen to us as a family, how people were going to react, because this was 1987. We had the press on the doorstep, the curtains shut, don't answer the phone, all of these sorts of things going on. And I was really, really frightened. And I thought, well, if I laughed, how were other people going to react? I didn't know anybody else's dad who had changed gender. I felt really isolated. I felt really alone. You didn't send your kids off to counseling in 1987. There wasn't Mr. Google to turn to, no Facebook groups. And so, as an individual, I felt really isolated. But as a family, we all isolated ourselves. So we didn't really even talk about it as a family. And so I really struggled to accept it. And when you struggle to accept, you're told something massive, like my dad changing gender, or somebody is dying of a dreadful disease, or perhaps, you're told, a pregnant mother is told that their baby is likely to be disabled, all of those awful, awful things that are happening, and you go into shock. And the more you stay in the shock frame of mind and unable to accept it, the further you go down the grief cycle. Then that's where, if you keep going down that slippery slope, you can go into depression. But then it's finding your way out the other side, accepting the situation. And so I'd taken myself down this slippery slope of not accepting. I realized now that I was making, I'd put myself into victim mode. So it was, look what's happened to me. My dad isn't my dad anymore. My daddy's now Joan. I don't know whether I can relate to this person, you know, and I was taking myself through that whole process until you realize that enough is enough and you need to start drawing yourself back out of these thoughts and these feelings. And then you go back up the slope of acceptance and then you can start pulling yourself way out of it and you work your way back into your new normal of living. And I truly believe that. Because I wasn't being honest with myself, and this is what I talk about in my TEDx talk, it's about self-honesty. This is how I really had to solve my thoughts and feelings around it, is what am I really thinking? What am I really feeling? And it's a hard process because you don't want to acknowledge all of those terrible thoughts and feelings you were having. They make you feel really guilty and ashamed of yourself. But it isn't until you start processing those really difficult thoughts and feelings that you start to learn and understand yourself. And then you can start to work out, okay, yeah, I did think and I did feel those things, but I don't want to think and feel them. How do I want to think and feel instead? And then take yourself off into that process.
So during that transition time, who supported you? How did they support you? And where were you able to grasp information from? Because as you said earlier, there was no Google. Anything happens now, you want to know how to do it. You just get on your smartphone and you tap it all out. But at that time, who was around to support you?
So I've got my boyfriend, who's now my husband and still my husband. He was fantastic. And, you know, when I originally told him, because we were sort of going out in 1987, he just said that, Kath, I don't love your dad, I love you. And so, you know, he was going to stick by me, us. And was very accepting of everything. And then eventually I met this fantastic lady at the postnatal group. We were both there, you know, with our baby daughters. But it took me a long, long time, you know, brand new friendship to actually start talking to her about it. And eventually I spilled the beans and she just put her arms around me and she just said, Kath, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And it was okay. And really, all the turmoil was what I was forcing upon myself and other people's perceptions of the situation, when really it's nothing to do with them. They can think and feel whatever they want to think and feel. This is about me and my relationship with Joan, who was my dad, and my mum, and their relationship, and how I was going to tell my children and, you know, the immediate family.
Oh, wow. I find it interesting when you talk about terminology, because in some places, when you're talking about your dad, you say he, and when you're talking about Joan, you say she. How does that work?
It took me a long, long time. I remember when I was at work at the jail and we'd all sit around and we'd all have lunch together. It was like a little community lunchtime for us teachers. I would hear myself saying in one sentence, he, she. And I would often talk about my parents or my mum and my auntie Joan. And then when I eventually told one of the ladies at work, she said, I always wondered why you never said my mum and dad. You would either refer to them as parents or my mum and my auntie Joan. But it took me a long, long time to get that organized in my head. And even after 30 years, when I wasn't thinking about it, I just turn around and go, oh, dad. And I just learned to just bite my lip. And just to accept what I'd said, and I'd just say, I'm really sorry. And Joan would go, that's all right. And then we'd carry on. Instead of feeling ashamed and guilty and not knowing what to say, you just say, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. And that is what the whole process about self-honesty is learning to hold your hand up, whether it's to yourself or to somebody else, and say, I'm really sorry. I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't have done that. I want to make it right. And then, the more you practice that, the easier it becomes. It's like practice makes perfect, isn't it? And you can be more open at the end of the day.
Yes, I hear what you're saying because I'm thinking back to my work in prisons as well, where you have before the person's convicted, they are the defendant, then they become the offender, then the prisoner. We're always attaching labels to that same person all the way through their, all the way through their journey. But it's comforting to know that it's okay to make a mistake, when you're addressing somebody. Apologize and then just move on to what the next
That's
thing
it.
might be.
It's really important to just let go of your ego and just hold your hand up and say, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say that. That was a mistake. Because our brains go into automatic motion, don't they? Both my parents have passed away now. And when I speak to my uncle, he still goes back to your dad and talking about Joan in the past tense. And I do it. And I'm having to be really quite mindful now that not to revert back to that. And always talk about my dad. If I'm talking about camping holidays when I was young, it was my dad. But if it's talking about caring for my parents when they were poorly, it's Joan. It's all relative in the history of my life with my dad and with Joan.
Yes, when I'm talking about domestic abuse issues, for me, it will depend on which audience I'm speaking to. So, for example, if I'm talking about financial abuse and I'm talking to an older crowd, I might talk about the family allowance book because they're going to relate to the family allowance book. If I said that to the Generation X or Z, they wouldn't have a clue what I was talking about. So it has to be relatable to the audience that I'm speaking to. I'm anxious to go back to the book because in part two of the book, you give some strategies of how we can help. I'll read it out. It says, Introduction to my 7 steps in living with my new normal. I know that you've got 7, and I don't want you to give them all away because I want people to go out and buy your book. And you've mentioned already talking about shock and denial, but let's talk about maybe the middle bit, stage 2, which is anger and depression. Do you want to say a bit more about that?
It's a very individual affair almost. And I think that when you are in the middle of whatever it is that you are experiencing, it's very easy to be totally consumed by it and not seeing what's going on everywhere else. And what makes it more difficult as well is that you can feel really isolated, feel really, really lonely, and think that nobody understands what you're thinking and feeling. And to a certain extent, that's absolutely true because we're highly unique people, aren't we? Love, for example, can it be interpreted in all different sorts of ways, can't it? And we all have different strengths of these feelings. And this is where putting your hand on your heart, really being in touch with what's going on in your heart, what's going on in your head, is really going to help you manage that victim mode that you are forcing yourself into. And, the self-honesty will help you draw yourself through it and out the other side, and having a vision of how do I want to be really thinking and feeling instead? How is this negativity relating to you? Is it being supportive? And what do I want instead? And then working out how you're going to change it, which is what I hope I deal with through the second part of the book.
Let's move on a bit. How did the TEDx opportunity come about?
Well, I'd written my book and that satisfied me a bit. And then I just kept having feelings of, I want to talk about this more. And I thought about TEDx And I'd even investigated it, how you get involved. And the process just seemed really daunting, really complicated. And it put me off. And then I had met a lady called Elaine Powell many years ago at a Wolverhampton business networking event. And she put on a half-day workshop, something like that. It was December 2020. Would it be December 2020? No, 21. And suddenly her Facebook ad just popped up into my Facebook feed, and there she was. How to speak like a TEDx speaker. And I thought, well, I'm at this stage where I'm 57. I need to start doing something, making a big difference, not just a little bit of a difference or a tiny bit of a difference, depending how big you're looking at it. I need to start making a big difference, and I need to start talking about this. And so I just answered the message, had a one-to-one conversation with her, and made the decision to start working with her, because I thought, I either do it or I don't do it, and then I regret it. And I didn't want the regret. And this is the next step from my book. By this time, I didn't really know what I wanted to speak about, whether it was about transgender. In the meantime, my son had had a bad mountain bike accident and broken his neck, so I had become tetraplegic, so I didn't know whether I wanted to talk about that. But yeah, I started working with Elaine, and she really helped me channel down what it was that I wanted and needed to speak about, and just helped me get on with it, helped me apply, helped me write, helped me prepare to perform for it. And I don't regret it. I don't regret it at all. However, on the morning, I was petrified, and I woke up and I just thought, why am I putting myself through all of this torture for this? And then I just sat back and I just thought, if I don't do it, I'm letting a lot of people down. I'm letting myself down, TEDx Wolverhampton, Elaine down. I'll have spent a lot of money with all of this mentoring for nothing. And if I don't do it, I'm just going to regret it. And so I did a little bit of emotional freedom technique to help me get through it, and then spoke to Elaine just before I went on and did my talk. But even up until I stepped onto the stage, the introducer, Martin, I'd never heard anybody else say it. I'd heard me say it, I'd written it, I'd read it because of what I'd written, but I never heard somebody else say, imagine in 1987 that your dad tells you something really unexpected. And I nearly went into floods of tears, and I'm getting lots of reassurance from the ladies behind behind the curtains. And that's why when I go on, my voice is shaky, because I was nearly in tears 2 minutes before. I'm having to control all of that emotion to talk about something that was, and still is, can be really, really emotional for me.
Yes. I mean, that certainly came across, but for me, it comes across as being quite authentic, quite sincere, quite an open and honest exchange of what your ideas are about. And isn't that what TEDx is all about? And what it was founded for was about, sharing ideas and different perspectives and so on. I know Elaine Powell, so I've also sat in on a couple of
Oh,
her free workshops as well, and she's absolutely, fantastic, so I'm not surprised. But you just don't apply and then end up on the stage.
no.
How does TEDx support you through that process? I know you had external support from Elaine, but how does TEDx itself support you?
From what I gather, every TEDx curator runs it slightly differently. Some curators have writing coaches, performing coaches, at Wolverhampton, we didn't really have that so much. But for me, because I'd got Elaine, for me, I didn't really want somebody else getting involved because I knew I'd got the person I needed to help me get there. You go, you have a meeting to meet the staff. They explain the situation. We had a couple of rehearsals. You go in and rehearse the night before. They were absolutely fantastic at reassuring you. I have the Facebook page. They give you your title pages and all of that so that you can promote yourself as well. And they're just there for what you need. And the support for us was huge. And just the camaraderie between all of you speakers as well. And I really noticed that the people who perhaps didn't go to all of the meetings didn't really gel so much with everybody else. And, I remember in the dressing room, it's all really nervous and like, well, I'm using this essential oil, or I'm doing this, or I'm doing that. And so I learned how to do a self hug and a butterfly hug and all of these different sorts of things. We were just sharing techniques to help keep ourselves calm, keep our nerves under control. And that is part of the whole experience. And then, going out and, just the lights, the heat from the lights. And this is why you need the practice and to go to the dress rehearsal so you can experience what it's like when you actually go out on stage, because it's not how you envisage it's going to be unless you've done a lot of these sorts of things. And let's face it, most people haven't.
Yes, but from what I've understood, though, it's the women getting together, and there were men involved in the, that gave their TEDx talks as well. You're still in touch with each other now, which I think is phenomenal, because it was very easy to get hold of you just by asking Aurea, I'd like to interview Kath, how would I get hold of her? And it was almost like a click of a finger. Yes, I still hear from her now. And what I liked about your story is that at the end, it enabled others to share their transgender story as well. So I don't know if you remember the gentleman at the front who got up and spoke. Again, we had one powerful talk from you and the others, but you also then enabled somebody else to talk about his journey and his story, and that those conversations carried on.
And that's what I really enjoyed about TEDx Wolverhampton 6 months before. I happened to be in Edinburgh at my son's, and TEDx University of Edinburgh was on. So I went to that one, and they didn't have the Q&A at the end. And that's what I really like. It's just like you said, it gave other people an opportunity to speak up. And what was so interesting about those two gentlemen was that first gentleman was female to male transition, and he was asking, how can trans people make it easier for their family? And then on the other end of the scale was this gentleman who I felt knew somebody who was going through transition or was thinking about it. How could they talk to the family? So this was coming from two separate sides. And I was answering the questions and I thought, this is why I've done my talk, because there's a lot of talk around transgender, but it's like I say in my talk, there's the invisible group who get missed. And even though, quite rightly, the focus is on the person who needs to be who they really need to be, but it has a ripple effect. And this what needs to be talked about is that it's okay to have, in fact, I put a post up on LinkedIn this morning. It's okay to have these feelings, even though you can be loving, you can be supportive, respectful, but it's still okay to have these uncertainties because you can't obliterate everything that's happened pre-reassignment. And you're still going to get things mixed up. You can't expect to change 23, 30, even 10 years of language of around this person, it's going to drag up a lot of difficult thoughts and feelings and insecurities, and that's okay. It is okay, but it's what you then do with it and how you manage it that's so important. And this is where the self-honesty comes in with learning and understanding yourself. And the more you learn and understand yourself in this situation will really help you in the next situation. So when my son broke his neck, what I'd learned about myself through all of that victim mode of my relationship with my dad to Joan really helped me manage how I was now processing my son not being the child that I gave birth to anymore.
How is he doing
And
now?
it's so he's good, he's healthy, he's finishing university, he lives up in Scotland with 24-hour care, still procrastinates hugely over his uni work. That hasn't changed. But yeah, life's different for all of us. It's harder. There's a lot more to think about, but it doesn't mean to say that you can't still have your laughs, your fun times, and sometimes you just have to make difficult situation light-hearted so that you can get through it.
Well, what I'm visualizing right now is when your dad was holding down the tent that you were all in
Yes.
to keep you safe. And I'm now visualizing you, Joan, holding the tent down to keep your son and your family safe. So, quite with the strategies and what you've learned along the way, and you're holding the family down. So, that's quite a powerful image that just came to
Yes.
me then. Kath, what's
Well, I'm
next?
I've just started writing the second book. So this is around restoring calm and peacefulness after the turmoil of massive change. And I need to refer back to when Dad became Joan, but this is more about how you really manage in difficult situations, how you prioritize, how you talk yourself out of deep emotional pain, like I experienced with my son. I never thought I would be somebody who would think about self-harm, but I was so desperately emotionally in pain that I did think about it. The second book is perhaps going back to the basics. I feel in when Dad became Joan, I'd missed out a massive whole set of steps to get to that self-help section. And so, yeah, I've got my second book going. I now do every quarter a free masterclass, How to End Sadness After a Big Change in Your Life. I've got a new online course coming out. So, seven steps to living your new normal, and just supporting more and more people where I can and how I can with one-to-one coaching, workshops, online courses, and help people be able to smile again after the turmoil of massive change in their life.
It sounds like you're really busy and you've got a lot on your plate. But when
Yeah,
you're not trying to save the world, how do you unwind and relax?
so I've got my dogs, so I go out walking with my dogs twice a day. I swim. I spend very valuable time with both my children, my husband. I'm learning to play golf now, so that's giving my husband and I our time together. He's a good teacher for me, actually. And then managing me and understanding me and my body. So I know now when I have to go and do my flexibility stretching. I know I use my essential oils very regularly every day. And making sure that I can say, I'm sorry, I can't do that. So it's setting your boundaries because it's very easy, which I talk about in my TEDx talk, to go into superhero mode and be in control of everything, but sometimes you can't be in control of everything. And it's about learning to acknowledge that, accept it. But also, what I've had to do is to learn what's the fact and what's the fiction, and separating them so that you can reduce, remove the emotional pain. Just because you haven't got the tears flowing and the lump in your throat, it doesn't mean to say that you don't care about the situation. It means that you are more in control and you can manage it more efficiently and more effectively and live life the way you want to live life.
I certainly like the bit about setting boundaries with people and, saying no, which I think we need to do more often. But Joan, if there was one essential oil that you could recommend, which one would it be?
Oh, which one would it be? So I use doTERRA and their wild orange. There's so many. Wild, if I want to calm myself down, it's the wild orange. I just have to open the lid, give it a good deep breath. I think I've even got it here somewhere next to me. A good deep breath, and it's like, the wild orange is classed as the oil of joy and abundance. And so, if there was only one that I could have, I'd have that one.
Oh, that's fantastic. Joan, we're coming to the end of our interview now. But if people wanted to get hold of you in terms of perhaps taking up some counselling with you or other services that you offer, how would they do that?
The easiest way is through my website, kathloyd.co.uk. You can find me on Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram and YouTube. And yes, I've got lots of videos on YouTube. It's Kath Lloyd Make the Change. That's my company name, Make the Change. But
Perfect.
yeah, through my website is the easiest.
Oh, that's fantastic. And if they wanted to get hold of your book, where can they get that?
You can get hold of it on my website. So it's $14.99. You can also get hold of it on Amazon. They are the two go-to places to get hold of my book. If you buy it from me directly, you can have a little note written in front if it's to a particular person. If you go to Amazon, you don't get that little extra bit of TLC attached to it, I'm afraid.
Yes, although I'll be giving this book away, I really do appreciate the card that you put in with it. And they're not getting the bookmark. They'll have to contact you and get the bookmark from your website. Kath, it has been fantastic speaking to you about your journey so far. Promise me that you'll come back when you've written the second book. It would be my pleasure to interview you again.
I would love to. It's been a real honour speaking to you, Pam, and I would love to come back to speak about my second book with you. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed my interview with Kath. It is competition time now. Kath is a TEDx speaker. What is the name of her coach? Taking part in the competition couldn't be easier. Simply contact me on Facebook or Instagram with the correct answer by this Friday by 5 p.m. BST for your chance to win a copy of her book. Thank you for listening. Please join me again next time. Bye for now.